Welcome back to another episode of Real Talk Sundays, the podcast where we interview pretty much whoever we want about whatever we want. And we also create a safe space. It's where Russian roulette meets, I don't know, Google it. And of course, my co-host with the most in true feminist fashion is diving right in to her workload and unfortunately can't be here today, but that's okay. We have a special, awesome, super guest that I will get to in just one moment. Until then, I have to do Val's job as well as my own, which means go like, go subscribe. If you're listening to us with your ears, I don't know, follow us on socials. If you're following us on socials, like and subscribe us on YouTube. Share us with your family. I'm sure they would love us. But ultimately, make sure that you're supporting us so we can support you. And if you have any questions, any comments, or you would like to be a featured guest on our podcast, DM us or go to our website. Like my shirt. Me too. Do you want one? Go buy one. They're on our swag store as well. We have she fine fine, he fine fine, they fine fine. We're inclusive here, okay? But we are the podcast because people can't handle real talk no matter what day it is. And in today's episode, we are diving deeper into feminism. Feminism part deux. And if you just rolled your eyes and scoffed at this, then you're the asshole that needs to listen to this episode. Okay, so stay tuned. Then, of course, we're going to take a little brain break and talk about women in male fields. Then pay homage and give recognition to women in history who, quite frankly, didn't get enough recognition or any at all. And then we're going to end with an awesome and wonderful representation of feminism, a great artist of the week, Samba the Great. So stay tuned for that. But in true feminist fashion, we are bringing on a wonderful guest who is going to help me not only co-host this shit, but a really, really great friend. So I truly want to introduce her appropriately, an absolute stunning and incredibly beautiful force of nature to be reckoned with. A woman who is known for her amazing light that she sheds on anything she touches, especially any dog within the immediate vicinity. A force of nature to be worked with, you know, college educated and known in the SaaS company for her onboarding and customer care. Overall, though, I really wanted to bring her on because, yes, not only her energy and her insight, but she is a wonderful representation of feminism and empathy, and known with a proven track record of standing in her truth, being an ideal representation of a girl's girl, not only a true and good friend of mine, someone I love so, so much, a wonderful travel partner, and just a really gift to this episode, Miss Sydney Kremen. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you
got big shoes to fill, you got big boobs to fill. I don't know how you're gonna do it.
You're setting the expectations high here. Will you write my eulogy?
Absolutely. Not only I write it, I will read it. I will marry you. Like, I will not, like, I will be your minister, but like, if you, we joke about this all the time, like, we should get married. But I meant, like, I would literally, like, marry you, like, whoever you choose, I will be your minister and I will marry you. But no, I'm super happy that you were able to fill in. We were going to interview you anyways. You were our guest of honor. But yeah, Val's got boss ass bitch to do. I know a lot of you at home, I think we referenced this and those who are close to us know. But like, Val runs a lot of shit for her company. I know she doesn't talk a lot about her work.
She's very modest.
She's very modest about her work. And she is, yeah, she's definitely a dedicated worker. She's a hard worker. So this is something on the way here. She called me and she was like, fuck. I was like, bitch, we got it. We're good. She sent me her notes as far as, you know, her segment fills in as well. So we will definitely make sure that we give her the credit that she is due. But yeah, no time to waste. We got an hour for this. And it is a great part two to a wonderful, I think, multiple part series that we're going to deem feminism in today's modern world. But today in our episode, we're going to do in our last episode, actually, I did a very, very brief overview of the four waves of feminism. We kind of tied just the timelines to it, talked about the high points of it. If you didn't listen or watch that, go do that. It's literally not that much time. And quite frankly, I encourage you to do your own reading because during a lot of my research in the last 2 weeks on feminism, a lot of shit has come and found me where I'm like, damn, it's changed my opinions. It's changed kind of how I identify. But if you missed it, go listen. And then, of course, make sure that
you join in with, again, getting in our comment section and letting us know how you feel, man, woman, or any, all of our friends along the binary, join in, because I'm truly curious about, yeah, how the public feels about this. But our first segment is designed to really talk about the why behind the what, because I think that we're getting lost in a lot of definitions, a lot of terms, and I've been talking everyone's ear off about this, but we're going to clarify truly the message of feminism. What is feminism? The messages behind it, because it's a shit show right now. And ultimately, too, we need to lay some groundwork and plant some seeds for those future episodes. So we're gonna crack in. And ultimately, I think the biggest question is, where did it come from? Where did feminism come from? And basically, why does it exist? Why is it here? And I think there was a lot of brevity in the last episode where we were like, had to come to form because women were oppressed. We weren't seen as equals. But ultimately, how are you feeling about and your understanding of how feminism came to be?
I mean, that's a tough one because you think back to like early civilization and we're hunter-gatherers and there's no distinction of the role between a man and a woman. There's no distinction of gender between in the animal kingdom. And so when we think about feminism, this is, you know, specifically to us and it has something that has to do with like consciousness. We are making this choice.
Yes.
And so to me, I really identify the crux of where you know, the breakdown of equality where feminism really needed to kind of thrive is when industrialism, when capitalism really started to take effect. And, you know, I say that very lightly. I do mean any kind of like the monetization of your labor, going even as far back as that. But when we had to start defining what we were doing and putting a value to it. And all of a sudden, these domestic tasks that women were just assumed to be doing because it's what they had been doing, they were the caregivers of the home. And all of a sudden, those assets no longer had value in a capitalist society because they didn't put food on the table. I mean, kind of. and so for me, that's always kind of been the breaking off point. So, I mean, did the patriarchy exist long before that? Absolutely, yes. But it was when we suddenly had to start defining what our value is, what our role is, and why we deserve to be protected. Whereas prior to that, in, again, like the animal kingdom in history, nobody else is asking that question.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of pre-feminist, not necessarily big movements, but a lot of things in history that kind of went unsaid, or a lot of male advocates on behalf of, because not a lot of female shit was documented. And I think that's a big one to understand is even back in, you know, ancient Greece, Plato versus Crato, where Plato is one of the first men to be like, wait a second here. Women are brilliantly equal to us. And even when it comes into, you know, war and tactic and strategy, and it was definitely not well received by others. But then you have Crato who came on and said, well, if you make them equal to you, be prepared to be ruled by them or be prepared to work under them. And we can't have that. Oh my God.
Suddenly scary.
And yeah. And it had me begging the question like, well, what's wrong with that? We work under men, you know, and sometimes under obligation, under times, they're the best person for the job at the time. So when we flip it on its head, you know, what the problem is. But I definitely struggle too with why did it come about? And it was, yeah, much, much sooner than, you know, the 1840s and 1920s. It was way before this first wave of feminism. And we've had it peppered throughout our history. And it really was, yeah, when we had to really start justifying our existence in an inherently male-dominated world. This is global. This isn't just Western culture. And so it's definitely something where a lot of times men are the foundation and structure and development of everything that has come because of their physical strength over us. And so that's also something that is really frustrating when you're looking at equality, right? And a lot of people will stick to a list of attributes where, well, men and women aren't equal, and we'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, it really had to come to light. And then when it comes to America and what our experience is and our predecessors and their experience, it really kicked off, you know, mid-1800s. Early 1900s, and ultimately we had to have it. We were just, you know, it's to a point where we cried uncle, and we are to a point where we got to take it into our own hands. So that's why it's here. That's what it stands for. And I think that's probably our biggest one is like equal rights, equal dignity, equal access to resources, equal choice. And I think that's where we're starting to stray away from. And when I think men, but people in the general public hear the word feminism, it gets them so either in hackles or spooked or
flustered.
And that I think I really understand this. And when we start talking a little bit more about anti-feminism, kind of those roles, like that's what's happening is the true definition of feminism is getting lost in translation and it's becoming relative, but to like the user. So I think the biggest one that we were going to talk about truly was the difference in opinions on what feminism is and what it actually represents. And at the end of this, and I mentioned in the previous episode, as well as this one, it's equality. It's equal opportunity. It's an even playing field so that all genders, I don't care what race, what ethnicity, what sexual orientation, what religion, we all have a fair shot at whatever it is we need to do in our community. And the general playing field plays to strengths of the individual. And it is so much bigger than just women being equal to men. It is what is best to advance the human race moving forward. And I think what's happening is specifically men are getting caught up in radical feminism or social feminism, which is the very extreme. If you're going to put it on a binary, you know, you have a very more traditional take on feminism. And then you have this like radical, crazy, feminist approach where it's man hating. It's, you know, a lot of that. So what is your hot take on like modern day feminism and how people are just genuinely responding to it?
That's a really good question. So modern day feminism, often referred to as fourth wave feminism, is largely oriented around the sex, like ownership of women's sexual rights, everybody's sexual rights. It's intersectional. It is all encompassing. But I think, kind of like you said, a lot of people are seeing these radical feminists, people who are all over social media, people who are, preaching to hate men, that all men are awful people, very all-encompassing. And that's just counterproductive.
It's literally so hypocritical. That's the thing, the hypocrisy in it, too, where you're like, damn it.
Like, you're not helping.
You're not helping. That's not what we meant. But don't get me wrong. Like, we're not happy with you guys. But at the end of the day, that's not what we meant.
Yeah. No, I think a feminist approach is empowering. Mm-hmm. More often than not, it's not going to look at a person or an institution and say, you are inherently wrong. It's going to say, what can we do to fix this? What can we do to make this more inclusive, to make this better for everybody? Because that is the focus. I don't care what anybody wants to say. Modern feminism is oriented across, it has no borders. It has no race borders, no gender borders. It is about equality.
And that's, I think, too, we were talking about the differences between the waves of feminism, right? And you had a hot take on it as well.
Yes.
And fourth wave feminism, though it has a lot of heavy lifting to do from previous waves, the biggest one and a big takeaway from this is identifying the systems in place that are forcing the oppression, right? And I think my biggest clarifying message and the note that I wrote down was really noting that it is for human rights, it is for your fellow human in advancing that and fixing the systems in place. So no matter what issue arises, we can plug it into the top and it spits out the solution at the bottom, regardless of type of, you know, government that you're running, type of era that you're in. It's fixing the systems. Mm-hmm. But to your point, too, that you had made when we were previously talking about this was, how can we start a fourth wave when previous waves are still undone? Specifically second and third. And I think that's kind of getting caught in that. But yeah, no, elaborate a little bit more on that. Like, how can we continue on fourth wave when we still have shit to do from, late 1990s? Like, we're still working on that shit.
And quite frankly, I think first, second, third wave feminism, they're called waves for a reason. They're going to ripple. They're going to exist for an ongoing amount of time. And when those things are complete is, you know, a whole other complex discussion. But do they need to be more effectively and more efficiently accepted among the general feminist community? before fourth wave feminism is even viable? Yes. Mm-hmm. Because realistically, second wave feminism, which is oriented around our equality in the workplace, mm-hmm. amongst our peers, amongst our partners, and then third wave feminism, which is where intersectionality came into play, understanding that we can't help one group without helping everybody. Yeah. And there are still people out there taking part in the feminist, dialogue in this larger discussion that have not adopted those previous mm-hmm. concepts. And that's where we get these radical kind of branches of feminism. And that's why the message is so convoluted, because people are branching off, they're not actually seeing this as a progression.
Yeah. And I would say that is the struggle with the last 50 to 100 years, current last year being the 100 years of woman suffrage. But the reason why we've been fucking circle jerking, like, even though that's a term, but we've been circle jerking for the last century because we can't even get on the same fucking page on what is feminism. And you have, so many different polar opposites and opinions, and then just utter disdain. And specifically, too, we're not backed by the men because they have this understanding and they're taking radical feminism as the actual narrative of feminism. So they're like, we're not going to fucking help you. You hate us. We're like, well, we hate you because you hate us. And that's not it. And then we're over here, flash forward 2020 fucking five, and we're fighting for the same shit. And thank God we still have the right to vote, but like,
for how long?
For how long? And so that is the root of it, is I feel you find clarity in the term, and also the term equality is getting tossed around, and it's relative now to the end user. You can use equality the same in the same sentence twice and have two completely different contexts. And now what's happening is people are taking equality and they're fucking with it, and they're making it relative to their argument or fitting their narrative. And at the end of the day, I think what really, for the clickbait and for especially, we'll dive right into social media, is essentially the hot takes that people are using. Well, men and women aren't equal. Okay, but we are. And it's not just men and women. We all are. And what's happening is you're taking this hot take to get your views, when really at the root of it, you're spreading a lot of not misogyny and misandry, but just generalized hate. And at the root of equality, when you take and say, well, men and women are not equal. Well, no, they're really not. If you're basing that on a subset or list of, whether they're subjective or objective, traits, whether it's upper body strength, empathy, ability to produce milk, nurture, better at engineering and architecture, and you're basing these on these probably driven more male, inherently male or masculine traits, and saying, well, if you compare it linearly, we're not equal. Yes, we are. And who are you to give it a subset of traits to bear? Are you a human being? I'm a human being. The guy producing this is a human being. You know what I mean? Like, we're all human beings. And what it is we need to level the playing field so that we have opportunity to identify and leverage each other's strengths. It is a yin and yang. And we're so busy. We're better than you. We're equal than you. We're stronger than you. We're smarter than you. Studies show. Everything is caught. And here we are, flash forward 100 years later, and we're fucking doing the same thing with very too little progress.
Circle jerk.
It's a circle jerk. And it's not even ending fun. And normally, the circle jerks I partake in end really fun.
Much better than this one.
Waiting for it. But let's talk about social media, because we're in the modern day, dude. Social media has been around since, and you're hella younger than me. So it's been around for a majority of my young adulthood. My old, basically mid-20s is really showing my age, is really coming to. But then you have kids right now, my son, my daughter, who from utero, we have social media. Yeah. So let's talk specifically about what's going on in social media with content creators and the narratives that they're running around feminism. And specifically, either those who we follow, those who we don't follow, those names that we know about, who are, given the hot takes and really not spreading clarity, even if that's their intent, whether what side they fall on, but really just contributing to this ambiguity.
No, I think that's a really good way of referring it, or like referencing it. I think social media has done a lot of really, really great things for all types of like social movements. Yeah. It's helped people to come together, to share ideas, to collaborate in ways that have never been possible before, particularly
instantly.
Yes. Particularly with TikTok. And then we also see on the exact same, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, which is that that information, if it is not vetted, if people are not doing their research, has the potential to absolutely derail an entire movement. So like two that probably come to mind right off the bat are going to be like the Me Too movement that was way more popular back on like our Facebook days. Mm-hmm. But that was probably the first thing that I remember where there was just a trend of women coming together and saying, I have also been through this. Like, mm-hmm. this is a bigger problem that we need to pay more attention to. And then from there, it's kind of evolved. Like, I mean, even then, that was made fun of. People mm-hmm. were mocking it openly, calling it a joke. And it's kind of evolved. But like, and then you think of the 4B movement. Mm-hmm. The 4B movement that began in Korea, and it's very recently started to pick up significant momentum over here in the States. Really just allowing women across the world to share in these experiences and understand that, kind of like you said, this isn't isolated to Western culture. This mm-hmm. is everybody. We're in this together. And then we have people like that fucker Nick Fuentes, mm-hmm. Who's piping off with like, your body, my choice. And there are kids now going around in schools mm-hmm. saying that shit. And that's like,
it's so
excuse
fucking
me?
Dangerous, dude. It's so dangerous.
So, I mean, yes, it has absolutely done wonders for the movement in general, but the amount of misinformation, the amount of risk, the amount of danger associated with the wrong people having that access to that many minds is intimidating, to say the least. I'm really interested to see how this plays out with a lot of younger generations. Mm-hmm. I think your kids are going to be some of the best examples of this. You do really good to monitor them, mm-hmm. but they're still going to see it.
Yeah. So. And building resiliency and question everything. Children question everything. And I think that was a big one as well, is going through different people that we follow, shit that pops up on our FYP, because we're TikTokers. We love TikTok. Don't get me wrong. We dribble down on Instagram. We partake on there too. I've fucked off Facebook for many years. I haven't been on there. But new social media threads that are coming up. You have your X, you have your threads, and things that are coming to, it's not going to dissipate. It's going to enhance. And then we still have shit like 4chan that's still on there. And that shit, you remember that shit? Are you too young for 4chan?
No, I remember 4chan.
Fuck. I was like, that shit's the first taste of like dark web shit that I ever got. Fuck. I was like, I should not be on here with my fucking
the
14,
shit that
15
I saw
year old
on
self.
The internet when I was fucking 12 years old haunts me to this day.
Oh, and you take it as truth.
It was just unmonitored.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking dialing my ass up. No. And so that, I think that's the bigger one too, is that is, dare I say, single-handedly next to news media, it's up at the top of the food chain. Social media is dictating narrative, and that shit's scary. And on both sides, both anti-feminism and feminism, to where the feminism side of it, which is true and correct for equality, is getting misconstrued as radical feminism, fuck all the men, la 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 la. And ultimately, the other side of it, which is more of like a traditional, you know, traditional feminism or your modern day, you know, trad wife, if you will. And they're pinning against each other, even though that's not even a true representation of the polar opposites, right? It's just examples. But you're now, the irony is we're now pitted against each other. So even within this movement, the irony and the hypocrisy of, we have people on this far, far side of it saying like, oh, you know, I am more traditional, and even from a biblical sense, and this has got to be a whole other, you know, talk, where it's like you have a religious impact on truly understanding and believing to your core that men are superior to you as a female and doing right by God in that sense. And so you have this more super far over here, and they're poking fun at manipulating the other side, which is a career oriented, I don't want fucking kids and that's my choice. And almost this guilt, shame. You're going to wish that at 32. You were sold a fucking lie. You were sold a fucking lie, and you're going to wake up at 32 and realize you're not fulfilled because you don't have a family. In some cases, yes. In most cases, no. Double income, no kid couples are pretty fucking happy, the ones that I know anyways. But the irony is, We're so busy pecking at which lifestyle's better and you're missing out on, and you don't really understand the true, you know, your true freedom here. We're missing out on, again, another definition of feminism, which is, bitch, if that makes you happy, go get your bag. If you want 8 kids and you want to be a homemaker and you want a homestead and you want to be right by your husband and you want to do all that shit, that's your choice. And you have the equal playing field to succeed in that. Just as equal as a boss ass bitch who wants to make 6 figures, be the top of the food chain, and possibly be the CEO of her own company, you have equal opportunity to do that and compete. And that in and of itself, it just frustrates the fuck out of me, because I'm like, y'all don't even know you're doing it. You know how stupid we look? Like, you guys, please stop fighting. We mean the same thing. We're not communicating effectively. And again, that's contributing as much convolution, as much faction, as much as we can divide, so everyone else can conquer. And that is truly at the root of why we're not seeing progress in a modern day where we can make shit happen overnight. Movements happen overnight. And some of the big ones we were talking about, some of the people that I truly feel are the irony behind this anti-feminism feminism, right? And I truly wrote down, what in the actual fuck? because we were even talking about the anti-feminism rhetoric that we were looking, because I wanted to research both sides and the shit that's being spewed. And I think what's happening is a majority of those creators, men and women, and also a lot of in the trans, you know, and even and anybody really on the binary is confused on what the fuck they're even talking about. Because they'll make a reference, like the bullshit one where it was like, I'm not a feminist, I like to shave my pits. What the fuck are you even talking about? That the choice that you can have body hair or not body hair, what the fuck? That has nothing to do with it. But it comes back, I guess, to the power of choice. And so let's talk about specifically, yeah, some creators. So you have that guy. What was his name again?
Nick Fuentes.
I don't remember his name. What was his name? Nick Fuentes. Okay. So you have that guy, which, okay. And then you have people like Hannah Pearl Davis, which, here's the deep-rooted irony in it. That bitch is college educated. So for you at home, and this is something, too, I was talking to Val about, and I had mentioned it in the previous one, is like, this is the confusion towards feminism. You don't get to pick and choose, especially as a woman, when you want to partake in feminism and when you don't. If you have gone to secondary school, primary school, any college education, bitch, that's feminism. You divorced your husband and you're still walking around and you wanted to actually marry your second, your third, your fourth husband, bitch, that's feminism. You have a credit card, you have a house in your name, a lease in your name, a car in your name, bitch, that's feminism. You have sole custody of your children, bitch, that's feminism. Like, this is, I think, the part that is truly catching me up in the irony of a lot of these anti-feminist social media people is they are still a representation of feminism, mm-hmm. both in the ability to speak, stand educated, own their own shit, make fucking money. They're making money off of this stuff.
Absolutely.
Which is crazy. And another one that I kept finding too, she pops up on my feed here and there. Candace Owens. Do you know who that is?
I don't.
So she'll pop up here and there. She also picks and chooses what kind of narrative she wants to run. And people are so busy calling her names. And this is the other fucked up part about women on women crime here. Is go into the chats. I'm a comment whore. Like, I love comments. The comments.
It's half the fun.
It's all of it. Like, 60-40, right? Before the video's even over, I'm like, what are people saying?
I'll be watching the video over the top of the comments.
Exactly. It's how it works. And that part cracks me up because the woman-on-woman hate is ridiculous.
It's obscene.
And I fight myself constantly when I see videos specifically of those two creators pop up. And I fight myself constantly wanting to join in and be like, bitch, what are you talking about? And I mean bitch is a term of endearment, mm-hmm. not even derogatory. And so that's the part that hurts the most,
yeah.
because it also happens when women are successful. Mm-hmm. Perfect case, Drew Afuelo.
Yes.
Which you're an adamant follower of Drew Afuelo.
I love Drew.
What do you love most about Drew? Let's spend a moment talking about Drew.
Oh, my God. So my favorite part about Drew is actually just happened recently. Mm. She announced to her followers that, like, she needed to take a break. She's like, y'all are fucking rough to deal with. I need to step away and take time for myself. And I feel like, she didn't owe that to anybody. She didn't mm-hmm. have to do that for anybody.
Yeah.
But B, just her owning up to that and her being transparent and her, like, making it normal, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I go through this shit too. I see the shit that you're saying and it's fucking awful.
Yeah.
I need a break. And so like she did that. She's back now. Saw her the other day, which is fabulous. Yeah. But no, I mean, that's one of my more recent favorite things that she's done. But yeah. also just like she's a fucking bad bitch. She speaks her mind. She yeah. is an adamant advocate for everything that has to do with like being yourself.
Yeah. And I think she's the friend that all of us really needed growing up.
Yes.
Because I had a friend like that. I do have a friend like that. We haven't spoken in a while, but I had a friend like that who specifically towards male behavior, when it would come to, yeah, inappropriate shit at the club, that fucking linger, just sitting at your table and you're just like, fucking go away. She's the bitch. It's like, you can go. We don't want you here. You're making us uncomfortable. You can go. And I used to have a friend like that. We'd be like, I'm so sorry about her.
I am so uncomfortable right now.
I'm sorry about her. And we would apologize instead of to our friend who's standing up for us, to the crowd or to the person, be like, I'm sorry, but kind of right. You do need to go. And she really came out of board eating men up, right?
Yeah.
And so a lot of people who don't like her are men. And I think this is a hot take on Drew Afuela. I fucking love her. I will follow that bitch into the sun, okay? One time before she blew up, she commented on one of my videos.
No
and I
fucking
was
like, way.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So really friends now or what? New York Times bestselling author. She's fantastic. You know, she's a great follow. She's a female, feminist advocate. This bitch is moving, right? And she just got engaged to the love of her life, rocking a fucking rock. Like, she is truly navigating social media, and it is one of the huge things that she needs to continue her career. It's a necessary evil for her, unfortunately, which is why I think she had to address it. Like, she can't just ghost us. Like, we're big followers. But at the end of the day, there is a blurred line between feminism and misandry, right? Which for a lot of those people, I've actually gotten this kickback a lot. Do you mean misogyny? Misandry is the antithesis or of misogyny. So we are just as equal and just as guilty. And I think that's also what's coming through, is a lot of men see that as an attack on their ideology, just their understanding and how they show up in society. And so they eat her up. They try to anyways. The beautiful part is they never do. She eats them for breakfast. But there is a lot of misandry there. But the truth is, she does love men. She's got a lot of respect for her fiance. She toots his horn because he's a good fucking guy. And she's held that line, and she has asked for that and fair treatment. But a lot of her content, whether it's legitimately misandry or misconstrued as misandry, kind of contributes to that mixed narrative of like, okay, are we equal or are we superior? Because when you call men fucking dumb so many times, a lot of us believe it. And so a lot of us, and when I say us, I mean women, are starting to dabble. And even a lot of trans, trans women and men now are starting to be like, fuck, dude. Men are idiots. Well, women are idiots too. We're just idiots in a lot of different ways. And so that part catches me up a little bit, because I don't want to ride the man-hating wave because it's not serving us. And unfortunately, men are a necessary evil in our release of our oppression. They are.
Oh, okay,
they are. They have to be. Well, one, yeah, right. I was like, unfortunately, I'm not gay. But at the end of the day, like, negative language I catch myself using all the time. But I think the bigger one, and I was looking at Bettina Arndt, A-R-N-D-T, Arndt, is truly at the epitome of the definition I'm after, which is, do not demonize men to gain equality for the sexes. Stop using them in a negative light to paint light for women.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's happening is you're turning it now into a superiority thing. And we don't like that.
Yeah.
So why the fuck would they? And it is not okay to make someone, you're saying, no, you're my equal. You're a fellow human being.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the words that I'm using describing you are really poor. They're poor language.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is what I get caught up in, is like, I fucking align. And the men that do, the men she eats up, deserve it.
Yes.
Because they came at it first, right?
Absolutely.
They always initiate. She never goes searching. They always find her and like to state her opinion. But that's the, do not demonize men for the equity of the sexes.
Yeah. I feel like the line is almost, you know, when it becomes less about the system, less systemic,
yeah,
and much more individual. Even just like when you were talking about like when women are no longer feminist, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's when it's about a person or an individual instead of like these social structures that we yeah. have in place. When it's no longer about the patriarchy, when it's no longer about like social norms that exist, social constructs that exist. That's when you're towing a line that you should probably check yourself and say, do I just have beef with you?
Yeah.
And do I need to address that? Or is like this something that is actually a bigger, larger picture issue?
Yeah. And I think if a lot of activists on this particular, you know, this particular topic take a step back and compare everything they're doing, anti-feminist or feminist, against one, the true representation of femininity or feminism and equality, as well as is this supporting the movement of the greater good of human rights? You are going to get your answer every single time. And when you tote that line, that is what's going to help us as a collective move forward in feminism, because it is important. And I really do like to talk to a lot of men about this topic, because not too long ago, like 3 weeks ago before all of this research, I truly did dabble in misandry often, and I had quite the superiority complex, especially with the men that I've put in my life and I've surrounded myself with. And you and I have talked a lot about how a majority of the men in our life have let us down. They have shown that, well, one, they genuinely don't think we're their equal, which is crazy, right? Yeah. And that, I think, contributes a lot of women's trauma because of the patriarchy and because of the societal norms and because it's inherently masculine. We struggle with that misandry on a day-to-day basis. And just like men struggle with misogyny on a day-to-day basis. And really understanding, I had this epiphany where I was like, fuck, dude. We're one and the same. You're so over there with your patriarchy. I'm over here with my matriarchal, you know, ideas and ideologies. And I'm over here with my feminism and my misandry. And you're over there with your sexist, fucking misogynistic bullshit. Fuck, we're the same. We're the same even when we're different. Like, that shit's crazy. But hot take on men. How are you feeling like, and it's hard too because I'm almost like, I don't want to give more men more platform or credit, but fuck, we got to bring them in. They're a huge out element of this. But the men that are actually also suffering from the patriarchy and they don't believe
it's overwhelming. And they just don't see it.
Yeah.
I mean, the men, all of the men that I've talked to, the men that I've loved, the men in my life are lonely.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter, you know, what I do, what the women in my life do to try to be there for them. They have been raised, conditioned to believe that they don't have this in like this emotional place that they can take up. They can't take up that space. And it's just quite frankly, like if everybody could cry a little bit more, I just feel like the world would be a little bit of a better place.
Yeah.
No, just getting in touch with their emotions, abandoning this idea of like that masculine wall that they have.
Yeah.
The possibilities are endless after that.
And I also think another term and definition that gets tossed around too much and misconstrued is toxic masculinity, and what that is and what that, you know. But this deserves an entire episode where we bring on, one, I feel men who are emotionally intelligent, educated, and quite frankly, have had their own experience within feminism, whether it's they're raised by women or understand, or they are modern day feminists, right? Or self-actualized feminists. And having a roundtable talk with men in our backyard about this shit. And I think and that's the thing too, is I'm not trying to point the camera or give a lot of it, but it is credit where credit is due. Men are suffering. And I'm not even talking about cis white men. I'm talking men as a whole, especially when we talk about oppression. Men in other countries are more oppressed than women are in the United States. And that's such a hot take to where feathers get so hackled. And again, we're talking about, you know, putting the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable. This is a true fact, unfortunately. And if you want to move feminism, you need to educate men, specifically white men, but men in general of all cultures and all ethnicities, about the patriarchy and how it is suffocating you. And there are staggering statistics. They are killed. They won. Death from violence, right? And this was a study I found. It was back in 2013. Okay, so we're talking 12 years ago. This is how, and it was still jarring. 90% of the homicides committed were by men, okay? 90%. The victims of those homicides were 79% men. Men on men crime, because the narrative that we are and what we feel on a daily basis is, we're getting murdered. Like, men don't like us. We're getting sexually assaulted. We're domestic violence, which with SA as well as rape and also domestic violence, we are the leading our statistics. When it comes to just murder, men, it's men on men violence. And so when I looked that up, it's 3.8 times higher than women. Men are killing each other.
Wow.
And so it was crazy because, one, it inverted my feelings towards men murdering women so much. And two, oh my God, y'all need to talk amongst yourselves. Like, y'all making 90% of the crimes and 79% of the time it's on each other. And one out of every three, and this is still just in 2013, a stranger, someone they didn't even fucking know. One out of every five, a stranger to a woman, you know, for women. So more often with people you don't know, and it is overwhelming. Men need to get behind the true reason of equality and feminism, because it is necessary to their survival. This doesn't even include, these statistics don't even include the suicide rate for men and military war crimes. So they take the fucking cake with killing themselves, killing each other, and killing other men in different countries. The crazy part about it is, and I am guilty of this, and I'm curious if you are too, our response has been, and who set that system up?
Oof. Yeah.
And who set that? And whose responsibility? And who built
that? Whose fault is
that? Who built that? Which, yes, but also, that doesn't solve the problem here.
It doesn't.
And so I ask these men after, you know, having a roundtable, and I'm curious to ask even more men and have more conversation about this, what's stopping you from jumping on the feminist fucking bandwagon and screaming from the top of your lungs, yo, guys, and holding your social circles accountable, checking your fucking dad when he pops off, stopping that locker room talk? And a bunch of them said, straight up, scared. You just told me I'm four times more likely to die from a stranger, no less. Imagine walking into somewhere. And three of the guys that I talked to, too, were like, don't get me wrong. If I'm at a bar and I see a woman getting assaulted, I am more likely to gang up with three other guys or myself, and that narrative will be stood behind. Other people get behind women crime. Like, we can do that. However, when it comes to racism, not so much. And you just told me that I'm more likely to get murked. And quite frankly, a lot of times it's going to lead to a fight and aggression. They're not controlling themselves, mm-hmm, and their emotions. They're not trained to. They don't have any aggression training. And so it goes. You've seen men, dude. We've seen it. The aggression. 0 to 60 real fucking quick. And it doesn't just end in getting your ass beat. It ends in murder, mm-hmm, for both, right? They're genuinely scared,
yeah,
of each other. And then, of course, the social element of it. That's bitch. That's being a bitch, right? Which, again, is this backhanded. That's being a pussy. Mm-hmm. That's weak ass shit. And I think we need to talk more in a future series about or a future episode about the benefits of feminism to them.
Yes.
The safety that feminism creates for them, their sons, their dads, their uncles, how you are going to experience so much more nurture for brother to brother. And it's not queer, which is, even if it was, so what? Taking out that toxic masculinity aspect of
Embrace
it.
Embrace the gay, you guys.
Embrace the gay. Quite frankly, I think y'all should kiss more and cry more. But like, why is that bad thing? Right? And the question kept coming back, well, how do I start? How do I go about that? So I think tabling that for a really well-rounded talk, but a bulk of it is y'all need to talk amongst yourselves. And that actually kept coming up in a theme, but boys need to talk to boys. Men need to talk to men. Men need to talk to their boys. And, you know, generational. Mm-hmm. And a big, big number one way to stop this is helping the next generation, helping our sons, helping the youth that you work with or run into or that you can mentor after you've educated yourself.
Absolutely.
But the lack of feminine education, and they're taking social media as that, that's what feminism is. And so they're stuck.
Absolutely. I mean, they're stuck, but they can
do it.
By
their own hand.
But they can do it. That's the thing. I mean, you're talking about having these conversations to navigate the patriarchy. Women have been doing that for decades.
Yeah.
We've been having those conversations with our grandmothers, with our mothers, with our friends about how to keep ourselves safe, how to talk in workplace environments to be heard. So, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but forgive me if I lack a little bit of empathy with boys who are scared to talk to their friends about being a better person. Hold each other accountable. My girls hold me accountable.
Yeah.
They call me on my shit, and I'm a better person for it.
And even the level of toxicity that I'm seeing within my son's friends groups, and he's only seven, dude. And then how men speak to each other. And we had a good talk about that. And so that's definitely something I want to talk more about, which is like, it's almost like they're prep, and even the fucking, you play video games, bro. Them chat rooms are gnarly. But it's almost like, and I had a good point of view, even from an outsider perspective, who was like, well, a lot of times when you're busting each other's balls, so to speak, it's almost like thickening your calluses for the real world. Because when you get out there and a bro you don't fucking know comes and calls you a fucking bitch, you've been called a fucking bitch by your dad and your friends. So you have a quip. You have a retort. You have a, yeah, at least I, you know, that's not what your mom said last night. And so it's this banter and joke that's off played. And the root of it is toxic. Y'all shouldn't have been talking about that. And you, what?
Why are you talking like that to each other in the first place?
Like that in the first place. And then they were even saying, well, like in sports, you know, when they're like, come on, fucking get it done. I was like, that's not how I play. You want to come to one of my volleyball games? That's not how we play.
We're slapping ass and saying good fucking game.
Hell yeah. Like we're so rah, rah, right? So that's I think where it's at when, with that. So we have to definitely table that. And I do think it is fair. In the sake of feminism, it is equal and fair to bring men on for that conversation and see what we can dig up. And quite frankly, ask more men in our lives. I would love to bring a little bit more, one, statistics, because holy shit, and two, solutions.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God, you guys. And we're all like, well, you guys are killing us. And we're like, yeah, we'll kill ourselves first. So wouldn't you say we got to work on this?
I would be really interested to hear, like, what your listeners have to like say about any of these experiences. Like if we have any men listening right now and you guys feel like you have something to say about your experiences operating under the patriarchy, your experiences interacting with feminism, your experiences with radical feminism, do you guys have like an email address they can
we
send
do.
Us to?
No, brilliant. I love you. This is why we brought her on. So on realtalksundays.com at the bottom of the front, you know, of the homepage, there is a comment box. So you can dive in anything. And of course, any socials with our DMs, I actively check them. To a point too, 20% of our listeners are men.
Ooh.
Which like, huh? Some of them from Germany. So I'm curious, and that is a big one. And the hard part is even this tone and giving them the stage for a minute on my own fucking platform, right? I have to fight the misandry for it. And a lot of my female listeners who are feminists are just like, oh my God, I don't want to sit and listen to more men talk about things. That's it.
That's it.
There it is.
Feminism is intersectional.
Yes.
Everybody has a role in this.
Yes.
Even men.
Even men, they have a huge role in
exactly.
it. And we'll actually revisit this in a minute. But hanging up our hat on the heavy shit. Thank you guys so much for hanging on for that one. Really a trend that has women collectively, and like this is I think the fun part, but collectively sharing the toxic behaviors of men is a trend that we've know and love and experienced called women in male fields. And quite frankly, is some of the funniest fucking content I've seen in a while. And it really is women experiencing, whether it's their dating or just the men in their lives, and flipping it on its head and essentially just swapping she for he and asking themselves, what would happen if I did that same thing? So not only did we find examples on the internet, but we have personal examples from our life. But an example to kick this off so everyone knows what the fuck this segment's all about. women in male fields. An example being, when he asks why it's okay for me to have a high body count and not him, I say a pencil sharpened by many sharpeners is a weak pencil, but a sharpener that has sharpened many pencils is a great sharpener. Hashtag women in male fields. So that's the shit we're messing with right now. I highly recommend going because it is worth a good fucking
chuckle.
It's a good scroll, dude. Everyone eats. Every single one I've seen fucking eats. But what say you? What's yours? What have been some of your favorites?
So when he told me that his tummy hurt, but I had to let him know that his hands and his mouth still work perfectly fine. Hashtag women in male fields.
Oh, fuck. Like the anger, too, where you're like, oh, my God. This is one that you're actually privy to. Telling him his ideas have a lot of holes in it, and it's not really that good of an idea. But then weeks later, I actually deploy the idea and kind of make money off of it, right? And get public recognition for that idea. But in no way, shape, or form do I ever give him recognition for that idea. It's just something that I thought of when I was in the shower. Hashtag women in male fields.
That's a good one. So when he starts to get really, really emotional and he starts to cry, so I hit him with, I guess I'm just a sack of shit, aren't I? Why are you even with me?
I guess I'm just a total douche.
Oh, I'm such a shitbag.
You're such a bitch.
God, you put up with so much. Hashtag women in male fields.
My personal favorite is when he told me that it just wasn't really working and he didn't really want to date me anymore. And it just, we were on two different wavelengths. And so I told him, no, I completely understand. And quite frankly, you're fat and fucking ugly anyways. And I only fucked you because I thought it would be a good idea amongst my friends group. Hashtag women in male fields.
We talked about you at brunch, just so you know.
We did. I showed all of them the picture you sent me. Yeah, we had to zoom in for sure. Hashtag women in male fields.
So when he doesn't finish, but I already did. So when I get up to go shower, I tell him that he can take care of himself. Hashtag women in male fields.
Women in male fields. This is one I actually posted on my TikTok, but it deserves a reiteration. When he gifted me an extraordinarily large gift for my birthday, and my response instead of thank you was, typically men that give gifts this big are cheating in front of his whole family. Is there anything that you would like to say? Because this is a very big gift.
Bitch, what?
Mm-hmm. Hashtag women in male fields.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
I went on a date with a guy, and he let me know that he was bisexual. And he asked me if that was okay, like if I was cool with it. And I told him, absolutely, as long as I got to watch. Hashtag women in male fields.
God damn. This is such a good fucking trend, quite frankly. I really, really love it. Do you have any more?
I have one more, but I mean, if we're moving on.
No, fucking send it.
So when he calls me out for lying to him again, and I have to hit him with, we can't keep living in the past if we want this relationship to move forward. Hashtag women in male fields.
Hashtag women in male fields. This is gold. And quite frankly, the irony and hypocrisy that comes with this, and I wanted to really, really draw this home, is this is more sarcasm than hypocrisy. And I think a note to our listeners, specifically the men, is really understanding that this is real shit that's happened to us, real shit that has happened to us, and in some cases more than once. That's the greatest part. And if you want to change this narrative, here are just like three things you can do specifically. One, you need to be an active listener. You need to listen to what the fuck you're saying, but also what we're saying. You need to take what we're saying with little to no judgment and really listening to our experiences without dismissing and minimizing our concerns. This shit happens every fucking day. Number two, I think you could do is challenge harmful stereotypes within your social circles and within that, you know, really just amongst yourselves. And then number three, educate and heal yourself, brother. Okay? You need to do some self-reflection for the love of God. And quite frankly, go to counseling. Talk to people who really have your benefit and your best interest in heart about some of this toxic shit you feel towards. Unpack it, dude, because a lot of it's coming from your trauma about women as well. And then once you really get on that, share the word and really understand that these are our experiences. And you would be goddamned if we did that to you. Hashtag women in male fields. So speaking of women in male fields, and a lot of the women who, quite frankly, have not gotten recognition in history or who need more recognition, we wanted to pay homage to a list that we've put together of women who, quite frankly, need the fucking spotlight. And I think this is going to be something that is a consistent segment. And Val is actually the one we pay, you know, a salute to for this segment. She's brought it up multiple times, especially during last season, where she's like, bro, we need to just start highlighting some women. Some powerhouses of women. So credit where credit is due. These are the women who had the clit to get it done. First and foremost, I wanted to bring in Val's contribution. She was specifically on top 10 women, black women in history, who've really just driven home what's going on, you know, in modern feminism. But her contribution was essentially, I'm going to pick Dorothy Height as her first one. She was a civil rights and women's rights activist who served as president of the National Council for Women for 40 years. She offered advice to Eleanor D. Roosevelt, Dwight D. Eisenhower, Lyndon B. Johnson, and has helped organize a lot of feminine movements. Dorothy Height. What's yours? What's one for you?
Ooh, so the first one that came to mind for me was Julia Tofana.
Julia Tofana?
So she is the person who is credited with creating Aqua Tofana, which, if you are not familiar with it, is actually a concoction of several poisons that was distributed to women prior to no-fault divorce, so that women could essentially drug their husbands to get out of their abusive marriages.
Oh, that's a golden one.
And she is, I say allegedly, like she's associated with it. There's a lot of conversation around who it actually is, because Aqua Tofana is a well-known name, but there's like three or four different people that a lot of conversations place it between. But I'm running with Julia.
Ooh, snaps for Julia.
Thanks, Julia.
Thanks, Julia. A lot of our predecessors. Another one contributed to from Val is a Mary Church Terrell, who was the first African-American woman to earn a college degree, a founder of the NAACP, and the first president of the NACW. She also co-founded the National Association of University Women. An activist all her life, Terrell spoke about the difficulties of being a woman, being black, and how those issues intersected. So a really, really huge advocate and a civil rights and women's rights leader. Very powerful black woman there. What's another one?
So more recent than Julia Tofana, taking it back to more modern day, I do really want to give a special shout out to, I'm going to fuck up her name.
Oh, it's a French one.
It's Greta Thunberg? Thunberg?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. A young girl who walked into this political conversation knowing very well that the people that she was talking to had opinions, prefaced opinions about who she was and what she was about to say because she's young and she's female. And she absolutely just made ripples in the world, proved that, you know, our voice is valid, and gave us a spot, or did not give us a spot, but really highlighted the role that we have and the role that we have to play in pushing this forward.
Oh, I love it. Right. And another one, too, just because on for sake of time, this one I wanted to drop. Lizzie Maggie, okay, was the inventor of the game board The Landlord, which was originally Monopoly. Swiped Her Idea was the creator and producer of Monopoly, but she was the original creator of Monopoly. So I think that's an interesting one. Somebody who does not get any recognition or anything for that matter. So that was a big one that I was like, the fuck? What are we saying about? What?
Oh yeah. My God.
Happy Monopoly. This is going to be a segment that we're going to continue because I have a long list of many, many, many other women. And for our final segment too, unfortunately, I think we're going to have to make this a part two because of how big it is, which is intersectionality. With our time, and I really want to pay respect to intersectionality, and I think this is another one, Kimberlé Crenshaw. Okay, is the pioneering scholar and writer of civil acts who definitely created critical race theory, or not created, but was a huge part of critical race theory, but created and coined the term intersectionality, which is a sociological framework that analyzes how social and political identities create unique experiences of discrimination and privilege, but ultimately where things intersect, you know, when it comes to abolitionism, when it comes to feminism, and a lot of other frameworks. But this, and it's something that's super, super important, and we really want to talk specifically white women. We're talking to you because the conversation, again, needs to start. The call needs to come from within the house. The biggest takeaway being us white women have more privilege than the more oppressed women, which is women of color. And we are in the back pockets of men and other white women, specifically Karens, though the ones who are really struggling with this narrative of no racism. So we want to talk a little bit more about how this intersectionality comes with, because feminism was birthed through abolitionism, you know, through racism. And so the irony that a lot of women of color are feeling about pretentious white women talking about being oppressed, especially in the beginning when they were like, bitches, we don't even have the rights. If you did get the right to vote, we still couldn't vote. What the fuck? So a lot of it is deep-rooted frustration and lack of context and understanding from privileged white women. When we have the ear, and we also benefit from the patriarchy in a few ways. So we need to spend a lot more time on that. Definitely want to bring you back. But we're going to leave you not only with the artist and song of the week, but we want to leave you with at least one really good resource, whether it's a book or a show, before our next, you know, talk towards feminism and which ones we want to talk about. Val's, on behalf of Val, she wants to recommend to you guys 6888, which is a 2024 film about the Central Poster Battalion that were predominantly black women, helped overcome racism, sexism, and poor living conditions, and played a vital role in the war. So that is her recommendation. Mine is White Fragility. It's a book by a female white author, Robin DiAngelo. That will have you thinking on your head and quite frankly reframing a lot of the shit you think about your own white privilege and racism as a fellow white person and white woman. What's yours? That's a good one.
So mine is actually going to be an author that I highly encourage all of you to kind of explore independently. She's got a lot of works out. Her name is Simone de Beauvoir, and she is a French existentialist feminist, and she is well known amongst the philosophical sphere. Goodness, I just finished The Second Sex, and it is a wonderful, just deep dive into feminist theory, the original ideas of equality, and like really breaking that down and your role within all of this in the world. Ooh, so
yeah,
do recommend. She is a lovely author.
That one down
to just kind
fuck
of
explore. Yeah. Well, rounding out this amazing episode, we encourage all listeners on the binary to think critically about their experiences with feminism and really do your own research, and as well as DM me and talk to me about it. But truly identifying and redefining the buzzwords that we talked about today. Go read, go watch, go listen, go follow. But leaving you today is the song and artist of the week in true feminism fashion, Energy by Samba the Great. Samba Tempo, born in August of 93 in Zambia. And so, Zambia, and known professionally as Samba the Great. Amazing sound. She is a singer, rapper, songwriter, and she's really exploded between 2014 and 2020. And she's got some great featured artists on all of her music as well. But Energy by Samba the Great. Enjoy your Real Talk Sundays. We'll see you next week.